Greetings, this is Dan White with the media book, The End Time Church, Chapter 64. If the right one don't get you, Satan is the great deceiver. He deceives the whole world. People underestimate him at their peril. The human heart is also deceitful above all things. So when you combine the natural human tendency to deceive itself with the power of the great deceiver, you get a lot of deceived people. What does it mean to be deceived? It means that they think wrong is right and right is wrong. Most of all, the deceived think they are right. Regardless of what the Word of God says, they simply twist the words of the Bible to say what they want them to say. In 1955, Tennessee Ernie Ford had a hit song that was number one for 10 weeks. That song, 16 Tons, about a coal miner, had this line.
One fist of iron, the other of steel. If the right one don't get you, then the left one will. You load 16 tons.
One fist of iron, the other of steel. If the right one don't get you, then the left one will. Satan uses that left-right approach. He tries force. And if that doesn't work, he tries seduction, as he did with Balaam and Israel. Balak, the king of Moab, tried to bribe Balaam to curse Israel. Balaam was a strange guy, for sure. In Joshua 22, he is called in English a soothsayer. That same word, quasam, is used elsewhere in the Hebrew Scriptures for a diviner or sorcerer. Deuteronomy 18:10, there shall not be found with you anyone who makes his son or daughter to pass through the fire, one who uses divination, one who practices sorcery, or an enchanter or a sorcerer. Then in verse 14, for these nations that you shall dispossess, listen to those who practice sorcery and to diviners. But as for you, Yahweh your God has not allowed you to do so. End quote. An Israelite who was a diviner was to be put to death. Leviticus 20:27, a man or a woman that is a medium or a wizard shall surely be put to death. They shall stone them with stones. Their blood shall be upon them. But Balaam the diviner was a Midianite, not an Israelite. So, in spite of being a diviner, he was alive and well. He obviously had a reputation for communicating with the spirit world, which is why the king of Moab went to him. The modern world, with its emphasis on science, totally discounts a spirit world beyond the physical that can be seen. These scientists and rationalists conceitedly think they can see everything that is. As the end time draws near, these folks are in for a big shock as Satan and his demons become more apparent. Somehow Balaam was familiar with the spirit world and was able to communicate with it, as was the witch of Endor that Saul went to, who had a familiar spirit. Balaam knew who Yahweh was. Balaam knew how Yahweh was. And in a bit of a surprise, the Spirit of God gave messages through Balaam, but just not the ones that Balaam wanted. Numbers 22, verse 2, Balak saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites. Moab was very afraid of the people because they were many. Moab was distressed because of the children of Israel. Moab said to the elders of Midian, "Now this multitude will lick up all that is around us, as the ox licks up the grass of the field." And Balak was king of Moab at that time. He sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor, to Pethor, which is by the river, to the land of the children of his people, to call him, saying, Behold, there is a people who came out of Egypt. Behold, they cover the surface of the earth, and they are staying opposite me. Please come now, therefore, curse me, this people, for they're too mighty for me. Perhaps I shall prevail, that we may strike them, and that I may drive them out of the land. For I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed. The elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the rewards of divination in their hand, and they came to Balaam and spoke to him the words of Balak. Now the words of divination there equals prophecies for sale. And it said by whatever power that whoever Balaam blessed was blessed, and whoever Balaam cursed was cursed. So Balaam wanted to curse Israel and get the rewards of divination. Like many would-be prophets, he thought prophesying should be profitable. Many modern evangelists also think they should be well paid. After all, important worldly executives in worldly corporations make high salaries, don't they? But when Balaam took the proposal to curse Yahweh's people to Yahweh, Yahweh heard him, answered him, and disagreed with him. God said to Balaam, You shall not go with him. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed. End quote. Well, what little lesson can we learn from that? Simply this: if you are really part of spiritual Israel, you are blessed and uncursable. Okay, that's not a little lesson, that's a big lesson. If you are really part of spiritual Israel, you are blessed and uncursable. So Balaam gave Yahweh's message to Balak. The Moabite king then upped the price, upped the bribe. But Balaam answered, verse 18, If Balak would give me his house full of silver and gold, I can't go beyond the word of Yahweh, my God, to do less or more. Strange. Balaam there called Yahweh his God. Balaam did double-check with Yahweh, though, about cursing Yahweh's people and getting the bribe, just to make sure it was still in no-go. Verse 19, Balaam told Balak, Now therefore, please wait also here this night, that I may know what Yahweh will speak to me more. And God came to Balaam at night and said to him, If the men have come to call you, rise up, go with them. But only the word which I speak to you, that you shall do. End quote. Balaam did double-check with Yahweh, though, about cursing Yahweh's people and getting the bribe, just to make sure it was still a no-go. And Balaam said to Balak's princes, Now therefore, please wait also here this night, that I may know what Yahweh will speak to me more. God came to Balaam at night and said to him, If the men have come to call you, rise up, go with them. But only the word which I speak to you, that you shall do. Now you recall that when Yahweh planned to destroy Israel after the golden calf, Moses protested. Exodus 32:9, Yahweh said to Moses, I have seen these people, they are a stiff-necked people. Now therefore leave me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, that I may consume them. I will make of you a great nation. End quote. Now that was really quite an inducement to Moses to have Yahweh's people come from Moses. They would still be from Abraham as promised, but only through Moses. Moses, though, overlooked his own glory and pleaded with God not to destroy Israel. Verse 11, Moses begged Yahweh his God and said, Yahweh, why does your wrath burn hot against your people that you have brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians speak, saying, He brought them forth for evil, to kill them in the mountains, to consume them from the surface of the earth? Turn from your fierce wrath and repent of this evil against your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by your own self and said to them, I will multiply your seed as the stars of the sky, and all this land that I have spoken of I will give to your seed, and they shall inherit it forever. So Yahweh repented of the evil which he said he would do to his people. End quote. So Moses refused the inducement. But when Yahweh told Balaam to go ahead and go to Balak, Balaam did not protest. In fact, he left early the next morning. He wanted to curse Israel, or at least he wanted Balak's bribe. Verse 21 of Numbers 22, Balaam rose up in the morning, saddled his donkey, and went with the princes of Moab. It seems that Balaam was too eager. I guess his income was too meager. It's like he got Balak's boys out of bed. Hurry up, guys, let's go. And perhaps that's why God, after telling Balaam to go, got angry when he went. Verse 22, God's anger was kindled because Balaam went. And the angel of Yahweh placed himself in the way for an adversary against him. Now he was riding on his donkey, and his two servants were with him. The donkey saw the angel of Yahweh standing in the way with his sword drawn in his hand. And the donkey turned aside out of the way and went into the field. And Balaam struck the donkey to turn her into the way. Now, who was this angel of Yahweh with the sword looking to kill Balaam? Consistently in the Old Testament, the angel of Yahweh refers to the one who became the Messiah. So Balaam was on his way to get riches and power, and he couldn't get his donkey to stay on the road. Haven't we all had a morning like that, where we just couldn't get our donkey to stay on the road? And poor Balaam was out in left field, and he didn't even play baseball. Verse 24, then the angel of Yahweh stood in a narrow path between the vineyards, a wall being on this side and a wall on that side. The donkey saw the angel of Yahweh, and she thrust herself to the wall and crushed Balaam's foot against the wall. And Balaam struck her again. The angel of Yahweh went further and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right hand or to the left. End quote. Now that was a pretty smart donkey. When he saw the heavenly messenger in the road, he just walked off the road out into a field. Okay, that's pretty smart. Then when he was stuck between two walls, the donkey crashed into one of them. Finally, with no place at all to go, the donkey just lay down in the road. Pretty smart donkey. Don't mess with a sword-swinging angel. Verse 27, the donkey saw the angel of Yahweh, and she lay down under Balaam. And Balaam's anger was kindled, and he struck the donkey with his staff. Oh yeah, that smart donkey could also talk. Usually donkeys bray. That donkey talked. Verse 28, Yahweh opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, "What have I done to you, that you have struck me these three times?" Balaam said to the donkey, "Because you have mocked me, I wish there were a sword in my hand, for now I would have killed you." The donkey said to Balaam, "Am I not your donkey, on which you have ridden all your life long to this day? Was I ever in the habit of doing this to you?" End quote. Now we really need to visualize the scene here. Balaam apparently was used to receiving certain supernatural visions, but we can say with some confidence that he had never before discussed his travel plans with his donkey. In spite of that unusual situation, Balaam continued this conversation and honestly answered the donkey's question. Verse 30, Balaam said, "No." Again, we have to keep the visual picture before us. The donkey asked Balaam, "Have I treated you like this before?" What happened then? Balaam raised his right eyebrow, thoughtfully rolled his eyes upward. Then his voice trailed off as he answered, "No." And surely by this time, Balaam must have been thinking, "That is one smart donkey." And the donkey was thinking, "That is one dumb dude." Verse 31, "And Yahweh opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of Yahweh standing in the way with his sword drawn in his hand. And Balaam bowed his head and fell on his face. The angel of Yahweh said to him, 'Why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come forth as an adversary, because your way is perverse before me.' And the donkey saw me and turned aside before me these three times. Unless she had turned aside from me, surely now I would have killed you and saved her alive." Okay. This brings up one of the great theological questions in the Bible about Balaam and his donkey, which through centuries of time, theologians have never satisfactorily answered. Which one of those two was really the donkey? Verse 34, "Balaam said to the angel of Yahweh, 'I have sinned. For I didn't know that you stood in the way against me. Therefore, if it displeases you, I will go back again.' The angel of Yahweh said to Balaam, 'Go with the men, but only the word that I speak to you, that you shall speak.' So Balaam went with the princes of Balak." So again, there's the angel of Yahweh basically giving the word of Yahweh. "The word that I speak, that's what you're going to say." And that was probably the one who became the Messiah. Even Balaam's donkey could have figured out then that Yahweh did not want Balaam to curse Yahweh's people. But when Balaam was told to go to Balak, the greedy prophet again did not protest. When Balaam met Balak, the Moabite king took him to a worship place, Baal, a high place where they could see the multitudes of Israel. Verse 41, "It happened in the morning that Balak took Balaam, brought him up to the high places of Baal, and he saw from there the utmost of the people." So there you have Balak, Balaam, and Baal. And they went to a high place of Baal to get Yahweh to curse Israel. You know what? That won't work. The intended curse became a blessing. Numbers 23, verse 7, "Balaam took up his parable and said, 'From Aram has Balak brought me, the king of Moab from the mountains of the east. Come, curse Jacob for me. Come, defy Israel. How shall I curse whom God has not cursed? How shall I defy whom Yahweh has not defied? For from the top of the rocks I see him, from the hills I see him. Behold, it is a people that dwells alone and shall not be reckoned among the nations. Who can count the dust of Jacob or number the fourth part of Israel? Let me die the death of the righteous. Let my last end be like his." Now, isn't it interesting there that Israel, who later wanted a king like all the nations, was not to be reckoned or counted among the nations. They were to be different than all other nations, different than Moab and Midian, and were not even to intermix with them. Just as happened with Satan and Job, the curse of the devil became the blessing of God. Verse 11, "Balak said to Balaam, 'What have you done to me? I took you to curse my enemies, and behold, you have blessed them altogether.' And Balaam answered and said, 'Must I not take heed to speak that which Yahweh puts in my mouth? End quote. Well, then Balak took Balaam to another high place, maybe hoping that the God of Israel wasn't over there. But he was. And Yahweh again put words in Balaam's mouth. Verse 20. Behold, I have received a command to bless. He is blessed, and I can't reverse it. He has not seen iniquity in Jacob, neither has he seen perverseness in Israel. Yahweh his God is with him. The shout of a king is among them. God brings them out of Egypt. He has, as it were, the strength of the wild ox. End quote. Or, as the Jewish Tanakh puts that one phrase, the shouting for the king is among them. Balak was Moab's king. Yahweh was Israel's king. So if Balaam knew that Israel's king Yahweh was among them, then why was he so eager to go with Balak? Oh yeah, the rewards of divination, the prophets of a prophet, go before God. Balak took Balaam to still another high place, thinking the curse might work from there. Nope. Didn't work from there either. Balaam blessed Israel again. Numbers 24, verse 8. God brings Israel out of Egypt. He has, as it were, the strength of the wild ox. He shall eat up the nations, his adversaries, shall break their bones in pieces and pierce them with his arrows. He crouched, he lay down as a lion, as a lioness. Who shall rouse him up? Everyone who blesses you is blessed. Everyone who curses you is cursed. Balak's anger then was kindled against Balaam, and he struck his hands together. And Balak said to Balaam, I called you to curse my enemies. And behold, you have altogether blessed them these three times. Now therefore, flee to your place. I thought to promote you to great honor, but behold, Yahweh has kept you back from honor. End quote. But before Balaam left, he apparently did two things. One, he blessed Israel again, and this time he included a curse on Moab. Numbers 24:15, Balaam took up his parable and said, Balaam, the son of Beor, says, the man whose eye was closed says, he says, who hears the word of God, knows the knowledge of the Most High, and who sees the vision of the Almighty, falling down and having his eyes open. I see him, but not now. I see him, but not near. A star will come out of Jacob, a scepter will rise out of Israel, and shall strike through the corners of Moab, and break down all the sons of Sheth. Edom shall be a possession. Seir, his enemies, also shall be a possession. While Israel does valiantly, out of Jacob one shall have dominion, and shall destroy the remnant from the city. End quote. So the first thing that Balaam did was to further bless Israel and then to curse Moab. After that, Balak went back to his kingdom, and Balaam went back to where he had come from. So, what was the second thing that Balaam did? Balaam is mentioned several more times in the Bible. 2 Peter 2:15, forsaking the right way, they went astray, having followed the way of Balaam, who loved the wages of wrongdoing. Jude, verse 11, woe to them, for they went in the way of Cain, and ran riotously in the error of Balaam for hire, and perished in Korah's rebellion. Revelation 2:14, but I have a few things against you, Pergamum, because you have there some who hold the teaching of Balaam, who taught Balak to throw a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit sexual immorality. End quote. You see, at some point, Balaam, who couldn't curse Israel, taught Balak how to bring a curse on Israel. Balaam simply got Israel to mix with Moab, so they absorbed their pagan morality, which included sexual immorality. That was the second thing that Balaam did. The same thing has happened in America's government Antichrist schools. Baal wasn't real. There was absolutely nothing there. All pagan religions are just human reason, idiotic ideas in the absence of God. In the same way, modern scientism and humanism are just human reason, idiotic ideas in the absence of God. Scientism and humanism are religious beliefs about creation and existence, just as Baalism was. America's young people, including almost all from Christian families, mix with Moab almost every day when they are taught the religion of Baal, which is human ideas about life without including God. And the plague of opposing God has now fallen on the nation of America as it fell on Israel. Numbers 25, Israel stayed in Shittim, and the people began to play the prostitute with the daughters of Moab, for they called the people to the sacrifices of their gods. And the people ate and bowed down to their gods. Israel joined himself to Baal Peor, and the anger of Yahweh was kindled against Israel and against America. In one of his prophecies, Balaam said that he who curses Israel is cursed. Balaam did bring a curse on Israel by getting them to mix with Moab. So what was the curse on Balaam? Well, when Israel attacked Balaam's people, Midian, the blood of Balaam was shed with theirs. Numbers 31, verse 8, Israel killed the kings of Midian with the rest of their slain, the five kings of Midian. Balaam also, the son of Beor, they killed with the sword. Verse 16, behold, these caused the children of Israel, through the counsel of Balaam, to commit trespass against Yahweh in the matter of Peor, and so the plague was among the congregation of Yahweh. End quote. Balaam, or really Satan, did bring a curse on Israel. When Satan couldn't eliminate them with a curse from God in his right fist, he simply turned to his left fist and advised Moab to mingle with them. Almost 2 millennia later, Satan did the same thing with the Christians. First, he tried the right fist of force and persecution. And when that didn't work, then he cleverly used the left fist of seduction. Clever being, that Satan. One fist of iron, the other of steel. If the right one don't get you, then the left one will.